Welcome to SCOTUSCast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUSCast. I'm your host, Grace Gotchling. On June 30th, 2020, the U.S. Supreme Court released its decision in the case Espinoza v. Montana Department of Revenue. By a vote of 5-4, the judgment of the Supreme Court of Montana was reversed and the case remanded. Chief Justice Roberts' majority opinion was joined by Justice Thomas, Alito, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh. Justice Thomas filed a concurring opinion, joined by Justice Gorsuch. Justices Alito and Gorsuch also filed concurring opinions. Justice Ginsburg dissented, joined by Justice Kagan. Justice Breyer dissented, joined by Justice Kagan as to Part 1. Justice Sotomayor also filed a dissenting opinion. And now, to discuss the case, we have Michael Bindis, Senior Attorney at the Institute for Justice.
The court held that the exclusion of students who were training for the ministry was not a free exercise problem because the exclusion turned on the specific use to which the scholarship was put, namely training for the clergy. And there was a substantial historical interest at the time of the founding against a state-supported clergy. So the Supreme Court held that this exclusion of students training for the ministry was permissible under the Free Exercise Clause. So the question yesterday for Chief Justice Roberts and the majority was, how do the Trinity Lutheran and Locke decisions interact in the specific context of a school choice program? By barring religious schools from these types of programs, did the Montana Supreme Court impermissibly discriminate based on religious status of schools and parents, as had occurred in Trinity Lutheran? Or, as in Locke, did it merely prohibit scholarships from being put to a particular religious use, namely procuring a religious education? That was the question that the court needed to resolve. According to Chief Justice Roberts and the majority, the Montana Supreme Court's judgment unquestionably discriminated based on the religious status of schools. And for that conclusion, the court needed to look no further than the very text of Montana's Blaine Amendment, which bars aid to any school, quote, controlled in whole or in part by any church, sect, or denomination. According to Chief Justice Roberts, that's religious status discrimination, pure and simple. And he went so far as to say that, look, even if the Montana Department of Revenue had the goal of preventing religious uses of scholarship money, the application of the Blaine Amendment still turned on the religious status of the schools themselves and the parents that selected those schools. And so he had no problem in holding that this was religious status discrimination, period. Now, for Chief Justice Roberts, this became a straight application of Trinity Lutheran. Trinity Lutheran holds that this type of status discrimination is impermissible, and therefore Montana's application of its Blaine Amendment was also impermissible. But what about Locke? What did the court have to say about the Locke decision and why it did not come into play here? Well, the court distinguished it from the Montana situation in two fundamental ways. First, the court noted that the plaintiff in Locke had been denied a scholarship because of what he proposed to do with it. Again, this notion of religious use. He, Joshua Davey, intended to use the government funds to train for the ministry. In Locke, students were perfectly free to attend schools with a religious status. They could take religious courses. The only thing they couldn't do was use the scholarship money to train for the ministry. Here, by contrast, the Montana Supreme Court barred use of scholarships at any religious school simply because of the religious status of the schools. That is, simply because of who the schools are. So that was the first kind of fundamental way in which the Montana situation differed from that at issue in Locke versus Davey. But there was another factor that the court pointed out, and that was that Locke concerned a historic and substantial founding era interest in not funding the training of clergy. many early state constitutions included prohibitions on state funding of clergy, and this was a tradition that was rooted in our nation from its inception. There was no comparable interest in what Montana was doing in barring aid to religious schools. As Justice Roberts noted in Chief Justice Roberts, I should say, noted in the majority opinion, in the founding era, governments actually did provide financial support to private schools, including religious ones. And the Blaine movement to prohibit that type of aid developed much later in the 19th century. And in the court's words, on a point that was developed in Justice Alito's concurrence that I'll mention here in a bit, in the court's words, this Blaine movement had a shameful pedigree that was rooted in anti-Catholicism, 19th century anti-Catholicism. And in that light, the Blaine amendments, according to Chief Justice Roberts, and these are his words in the opinion yesterday, hardly evince a tradition that should inform our understanding of the Free Exercise Clause. These post-founding developments, these Blaine amendments that came about in the mid to late 19th century, were rooted, according to the court, in 19th century anti-religious bigotry and could not provide the kind of historic, substantial founding era state interest that would justify discrimination under Locke. So those were the two ways the court distinguished Locke. And having concluded now that this was discrimination based on religious status, it applied strict scrutiny and held that the application of Montana's Blaine Amendment could not stand. The most interesting aspect of this part of the opinion, in my view, is how the court really drove home the harm that Montana's Blaine Amendment does to families, not just religious schools, but to the families who would choose them. And I'll read a couple of sentences from the court's opinion on this point. We have long recognized the rights of parents to direct the religious upbringing of their children. Many parents exercise that right by sending their children to religious schools, a choice protected by the Constitution. But the no-aid provision, the Blaine Amendment as I call it, penalizes that decision by cutting families off from otherwise available benefits if they choose a religious private school rather than a secular one. That to me is a very, very powerful point because it harkens back to decisions such as like Pierce versus Society of Sisters that recognize that at the end of the day, it is parents, not government, who have the right to make the decisions controlling their children's education. And parents can't be penalized when they exercise that right by being cut off from benefits that are otherwise available to them. Again, I think that's really one of the most important, if not the most important aspects of yesterday's decision. At the end of the decision, before it reversed the judgment below, the court rejected a very strange argument that the Department of Revenue had asserted. And this argument was essentially that, look, there can't be any religious discrimination here because the Montana Supreme Court invalidated the scholarship program in its entirety. There's no more scholarship program, therefore there's no discrimination against people who want to use scholarships at religious schools. Very strange argument, but as Chief Justice Roberts explained, the whole reason the court invalidated the program was because the state constitution prohibited aid to religious schools, and there was no mechanism by which to parse out the religious from the non-religious. Again, the very reason we wound up with the judgment we got from the Montana Supreme Court was because of a state constitution's mandated discrimination against religious schools and the parents who would choose them. Given that conflict between the state constitution and the Free Exercise Clause, the court held that the state constitution had to yield, and it accordingly reversed the Montana Supreme Court's judgment. So that is the majority opinion. Again, it was a 5-4 decision, but there were other opinions, concurrences and dissents, in fact, a whole lot of other opinions, almost 100 pages worth in total. I think there were 92 pages. And I'll talk about those other opinions very briefly, just to say a couple sentences about each. And I'll start with the concurrences. So I'll start with the concurring opinion authored by Justice Gorsuch. And his opinion really developed a theme that he first set forth in his concurrence in the Trinity Lutheran decision. And that is that this supposed distinction between religious status and religious use that has become a part of the court's jurisprudence, according to Justice Gorsuch, really at the end of the day, it's utterly unworkable. And he had a great passage in his concurrence that I think really drives home why not only it's unworkable, but why it's unwise. He says, often governments lack effective ways to control what lies in a person's heart or mind, but they can bring to bear enormous power over what people say and do. The right to be religious without the right to do religious things would hardly amount to a right at all. So again, Justice Gorsuch is really, really questions this notion that status and use distinction has any, should have any bearing on the constitutional question. According to him, both forms of discrimination are prohibited, both run afoul of the Free Exercise Clause. Justice Alito authored a separate concurring opinion, as I alluded to before, and his point was that under the court's jurisprudence, particularly a very recent decision this term from Ramos versus Louisiana, it's necessary to explore the historical origins of Montana's Blaine Amendment. And as Justice Alito noted, those origins are steeped in anti-Catholic bigotry, 19th century anti-Catholic bigotry. He recounted in detail the way that the Blaine movement came about, the way that so many state constitutions wound up with these provisions. And it's a fascinating historical study. I certainly commend it. It's also the first time I've seen an editorial cartoon reproduced in a Supreme Court opinion. It's got a copy of an infamous cartoon by the 19th century political cartoonist Thomas Nast that I wish it were satire, but it is actually a very genuine reflection of the anti-Catholic sentiment and the supposed Catholic threat to the public schools of the 19th century that existed at the time. So that was Justice Alito's concurrence. And then Justice Thomas authored a concurrence that was joined by Justice Gorsuch. And according to Justice Thomas, the reason there was even a question about the propriety of the Montana Supreme Court's judgment is because the U.S. Supreme Court's Establishment Clause jurisprudence has gone so wrong. In Justice Thomas's view, the Establishment Clause, first of all, should not have been incorporated against the states. And in any event, even if it was properly incorporated, the Establishment Clause does not prohibit government favoring of religion. According to Justice Thomas, the kind of sweeping, expansive reading of the Establishment Clause that the Supreme Court has taken has in turn resulted in a very cramped and narrow reading of the Free Exercise Clause. And according to Justice Thomas, it's the Establishment Clause jurisprudence that needs to be revisited in order to let free exercise flourish. So a very distinct take on these issues, and one that, as I mentioned, was joined by Justice Gorsuch as well. So those are the three concurrences. Now on to the three dissents. To say a few words about these, there were three of these as well. The first by Justice Ginsburg, and she was joined by Justice Kagan. And according to Justice Ginsburg, she agreed with the department's argument that I mentioned earlier that, look, there's no discrimination here. There's no burden on the free exercise rights of parents because there's no more scholarship program. The Montana Supreme Court invalidated the program in its entirety, and therefore there can no longer be discrimination. Again, she didn't agree with the majority's point, which was the reason there's no more scholarship program is because of religious discrimination. But that was Justice Ginsburg's take. Justice Breyer authored an opinion that was joined in part by Justice Kagan, and his opinion really disagreed with the majority on the merits, but he really emphasized, in his view, the need to take the religion clauses or religion clause cases, I should say, on a case-by-case kind of context-specific basis, rather than adopting the kind of categorical application of strict scrutiny that the majority took. For Justice Breyer, yeah, there's play in the joints between the religion clauses. There are certain things that the Establishment Clause permits, but that the Free Exercise Clause does not require, and states have discretion to operate within that play. And categorical legal rules, according to Justice Breyer, don't really work well in that area. They kind of break down. And so the court needs to take a much more case-specific, context-specific approach when it's resolving cases in this area. Justice Sotomayor, with the final dissenting opinion. According to her, there was simply no federal question for the court to review. As Justice Sotomayor saw things, the Montana Supreme Court invalidated the program entirely on state law grounds. She didn't think the court actually reached a federal constitutional question that would justify the U.S. Supreme Court's review. Obviously, the majority saw things differently, especially that language where the Montana Supreme Court did say that its Blaine Amendment in certain cases could potentially run afoul of the Free Exercise Clause, but this was not one of those cases. But for her own reasons, Justice Sotomayor did not see the case involving a federal constitutional issue. So what's the takeaway from all this? Well, the majority's decision, no question, paves the way for expanded educational choice throughout the country, especially in the 30-some-odd states that, like Montana, have Blaine Amendments in their state constitutions. Courts in many of these states have interpreted their Blaine Amendments in a way that prohibits educational choice or other student assistance programs if they include religious options. Because of that, getting new educational choice programs passed in these states has been legally and politically impractical. Yesterday's decision removes the legal cloud over educational choice in these states, and therefore really opens the political path to expanded opportunity for kids in these states. State legislatures no longer have to fear running afoul of their state's Blaine Amendment if they adopt the school choice program that includes religious options, because as the Supreme Court held yesterday, while a state need not subsidize private education, once a state decides to do so, it cannot disqualify some private schools solely because they are religious.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's FEDSOC.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.